Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Random Chatter. This episode number 233, recorded on Sunday, August 4th, 2019. I am joined tonight by Eric and Lizzie. Eric is filling in for Tim. Tim is, I think he just ditched us. So how are you guys doing tonight? Lizzie, how are you? We haven't talked to you in a while. You've been off the air for a while.
I'm good. I've been off the air because my internet is not playing nice games.
Yeah, the Skype gods have been hating us.
Yeah.
Yes, they've not been a friend, but hopefully tonight will be our lucky star.
Awesome. Awesome. So filling in for Tim tonight is Eric. Eric, how are you? Glad to have you with us tonight.
I'm doing pretty well. I understand what you mean about the Skype gods, though. We had Blake on for an episode of Movie Chatter, and he, too, had some issues. So, Lizzie, it's not just you.
Oh, poor Blake. I totally spaced last week. We recorded together, and then on Guardians of the MCU, I completely like spaced in the middle of the whole thing about recording with him.
He's a lot of fun. I wish the audio had been a little bit better, but I like Blake. He's a lot of fun. He's very energetic.
He is. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Oh, we had so much fun recording together, and it was totally my fault for not remembering the name of him or his show in the moment. I'm the worst, but he was awesome. Blake, you're awesome. Shout out to Blake.
Yeah, well, and head over to Guardians of the MCU and Movie Chatter to hear Blake on those shows. And then if you also check out the Blake and Sal show, he does that as well as a bunch of other shows like Clerks Minute and stuff like that. And he's got another new show coming this fall. He's a very busy guy.
He's actually taking this
entire month off from podcasting.
Well, I recorded on his podcast. He wasn't on. I just didn't do the shout out correctly or at all. But I am planning to be on his Boy Meets World retrocast in the future. So I don't know if that's announced. He's got an Instagram.
It is now.
He has an Instagram. There's an Instagram for it. It exists.
Okay.
Good. Okay. You're safe.
Good. Good.
Okay. Good.
Okay, so according to Random Chatter policy, everything that goes wrong tonight, including Lizzie's internet, is Tim's fault.
Absolutely.
And we will hold him to that. That is true. So that is good. We'll dock his pay. We'll send him, you know, letters, threatening letters, all that good stuff.
I love when we can blame everything on Tim.
It's a great, a great feeling. Now,
Lou, I have an administrative question for you. If he gets paid zero and then we dock his pay, which technically is subtracting from the pay, does that mean he has to pay us?
Yeah, exactly.
That means.
Yeah.
It's better than, you know, doubling his pay or dividing it by two. He's giving us money back. Yeah.
Yeah. We just dock his pay. Oh, I like this.
This is good.
Basically, he has to owe you a refund.
Exactly.
on live.
I'll be seeing Tim next weekend, so I'll make sure I get that in cash.
Oh, we'll send you as collector.
Yes.
Does that make you a bounty hunter or debt collector?
Ooh, I like bounty hunter better than debt collector.
I thought you would.
Yeah. Less paperwork involved.
There you go. Speaking of administrative stuff, let's get the business side of things out of the way early. Best way to get a hold of us in email is me sending an email to randomchatter@randomchatter.com. You can find us on most of the social media things, Instagram and Twitter. Twitter, you can find me on at Lou Skywalker. That's Skywalker without the E. Lizzie, where can people find you?
On Twitter at TWT about Lizzie and on Instagram at The Wonderful Thing About Lizzie.
You can find Tim usually on Twitter. He's at Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's. And Eric, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE.
And if you're so inclined, you can find me on Instagram as well. I'm in two places. I am just at my name, Lou Secchi, and you're also finding me on 6-Inch Hero. Let's see here. You can find us on Discord as well, too. We have a Discord server with a bunch of free channels for anybody that wants to get involved and talk to the host about the shows that we're on and, just general stuff in the world. If you wanted to get involved more on Discord, you can certainly donate to us on Patreon. That gives you access to all of our channels on Discord. We have more than I can count out there, although Eric just did a reorganization, which makes it a lot nicer to find the stuff and stay connected.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Maybe fewer channels, but more streamlined.
Exactly.
Easier for people who are new jumping in.
Exactly. So. Even us have been there for a while and kind of dusting things off and trying to find where to go. It's great.
Yeah. I hope so.
We also have a place where you can buy our stuff. If you want to wear a Random Chatter t-shirt or drink coffee out of a Random Chatter mug, go to randomchatter.com/store and you can purchase all those things there. And we get a little bit of the proceeds, which is fantastic.
And this month we are going to have the Echo Base logo up and running. I forgot to mention that on Echo Base.
I know you did. Yeah, I was thankful because I started working on the logo and then I was like, I need another file, but yeah, we'll talk about that offline.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have to hunt down whoever gave us that.
Yeah, I don't remember who did that for us. Logo. It was his listener. I know that. It was a great logo.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did a phenomenal job.
Amazing job.
We might have to go through, search your Gmail.
Yeah. I'll track that down. We'll see what we can find.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are you guys up to watching?
Well, hey, before we go on, I have a quick announcement.
What do you
do? Yes. A bit of an apology, if you will. I know that so far in 2019, we have not been great about getting our shows out on time, and not just Random Chatter, but across the network. It's something we've had some difficulty with. And a lot of it is, you know, the more shows we get and the more shows we have with multiple hosts, it gets trickier to do scheduling and editing and things like that. And there are a lot of times where we reschedule shows because we have topics that are really exciting that we want to cover and we don't want to have one of the hosts miss out. So rather than continuing without someone if they can't make it, we've postponed. There's a whole slew of reasons why we've gotten behind schedule. But I wanted to reassure everybody that we have a plan in place. We are making a concerted effort moving forward to make sure that we get our shows out on time. And that's pretty much effective immediately. From right now, you should be seeing the shows posted within a day or two of when they are recorded. So, for example, this one is being recorded Sunday, August 4th. I'm hoping that most of you are probably listening to this by Tuesday, August 6th. So I just wanted to reassure people that we are aware that this has been a concern. It's been a concern on our end, too. We have a plan in place. And we are enacting it effective immediately. And so we want to thank you for being patient and putting up with it for as long as you have been. And to reassure you that this shouldn't be an issue going forward, we are hitting the ground running. We are going to be consistent, especially with our primary shows. Some of the side projects like Short Circuits and stuff like that might still be more tangential, but you are going to be seeing the primary content come out on a regular basis moving forward.
Yes. And thank you for your efforts in getting us all back on track, Eric, because that's been, it's concerned all of us, I think, from time to time, and you know, life gets in the way and everything else. But I appreciate all your hard work, Eric, because you've been the driving force behind getting us back on track.
Thank you. But I will also admit that I have been part of the problem as well. So don't give me too much credit. But yes, I am playing the Taskmaster and cracking the whip. So I guess, you know, credit where credit's due for that, at least.
Well, so seeing we're working so much hard on network, you probably haven't watched anything, have you, Eric?
Actually.
Yeah.
Actually, it's been interesting because I have this new job now, which is great because I actually have some free time, but I still live in farmland, so I have no life. So I've been, I've been catching up on quite a bit. So one of the things I've been spending my time with actually is doing stuff behind the scenes for the network and getting a lot of these side projects completed or started that have been just kind of stagnant for a while. So that's been exciting, but I have been catching up on things. And in fact, that might be all I get to participate for in this show. I might have to duck out here in a bit, but I did finally get to watch the Detective Pikachu movie.
Oh, did you?
And I want to say that it was as good as I expected it would be.
Did you expect it to be good?
I expected it to be good, okay.
Like funny.
I just wasn't sure where you're coming from with that.
Lego movie adjacent, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously geared toward kids.
Yeah.
And having some kind of familiarity with Pokemon would help. I understand where the people who know nothing about it might be a little bit like not connecting to it. I am only just barely knowledgeable about Pokemon. Like my son corrects me every sentence that comes up when it comes to Pokemon. And, but I know just like I played Pokemon Go just enough to be able to squeak by and I really enjoyed the movie and it's a great family movie, I think. The effects were pretty good. The story was, again, about what you would expect for a kid's film, but it had plot twists that I was not expecting to see in a kid's film.
Really?
There was one plot twist that you could see coming from a mile away, but then there's another one at the end, and it's like, oh, wow, that one I didn't see coming. The pacing was good. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. It was quite good.
Nice.
I watched the finale for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I have not yet watched that.
Okay. And Lizzie, you don't watch it, do you?
No, I got off of it about season three. I'll watch it when it's done.
Okay. Fair enough. That's probably smart. There are some seasons that, like the season before this one, I thought was a little iffy. I liked this season though. And I think that they wrapped it up, in a very interesting way. Lou, I would be very curious as to your thoughts on it when you watch
it. Okay.
I started, and I'm still catching up on Veronica Mars, which I am loving, by the way. I'm so glad they brought that back. I hope it gets another season. And I started a new series last night on Amazon Prime called The Boys.
Oh, I started that too.
Oh, I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
This is, for those who don't know, it's a little bit hard to explain. It kind of feels like Powers that was on, I think it was the PlayStation Network, which you can get on DVD, and I recommend that you do. But it's a world in which we have superheroes, but they're very, very, very celebrity. Like, they get movie contracts, and they have satellites set up to predict where crimes are going to happen, and then they put the superheroes there in place with film cameras and stuff ready to catch the crooks. And it's very much about how well they can market it and make money off of it, as opposed to actually just saving the world. And what people don't know is the superheroes themselves are a little bit corrupt and frat boyish and alcoholics and drug users and partiers. And they're very, very much about the celebrity status and very narcissistic and arrogant. And so you're following these two characters, one who's trying to become a superhero and who has powers, and another one who's dealing with some collateral damage of a superhero incident gone wrong. It's very not safe for work. You would think that it's made by HBO. And I just finished, I think, the second episode, and I'm loving it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really good
stuff. I'm on episode 4, maybe, I think. It's only 8 episodes long for the first season, so it's pretty short.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's definitely darker than you would – well, like you said, not safe for work. It's definitely definitely R-rated. But, yeah, it's a great take on it. It's a very interesting take on the whole – superhero thing of being, you know, corrupt, and the company that kind of organizes them is corrupt too, and how that, you know, just everything about them, from what outfits they're wearing to what cities they're in to, you know, how they're perceived by the public. It's just a really fascinating take on the whole superhero thing.
Yeah. And worryingly realistic. Like, if we had superheroes, I imagine this is exactly how things would end up being.
Yeah, right? I was thinking the same thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
This is
the world we would end up with.
At Comic-Con, there was Amazon had an activation, and at one part of it, all of these people in like ratty clothes came out and were like yelling about having been wronged by superheroes and come join like support groups, and like it was really cool, and it made me intrigued by the show.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
Yeah, and the trailer gave me really like Watchmen-ish vibes, like sort of a grittier version. I know it's very different than that, but that's sort of the vibes it gave me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the themes are a little different, but the tone is very similar.
Tone of it felt that way, especially in like flashbacks when like the superheroes are younger and they really are getting a lot of fame from, you know, in the movie specifically. Because I really liked the movie regardless of, I think people are sort of split on it, but I really enjoyed the movie. Mm-hmm. And those flashback scenes, it reminded me of that part.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah.
If you've watched Powers, and I recommend you do, by the way, it's worth buying the box set. If you've watched Powers and you liked it, I think you'll really, really like this movie. And like Lizzie said, if you like The Watchmen, I think you'll like this. If you like anything that's kind of going for the more realistic spin on superheroes and less about the heroism and more about what it would be like in the real world, I think you're going to like this series.
Well, it's one of those things you ask the question, you know, what happens when you give somebody absolute power or just powers in general? What changes about them?
Or also, like, I mean, obviously Avengers isn't the nitty gritty part, but questioning like when the government has control over it or a company has control over heroism, what does that look like? Which is also an interesting concept. And I think you're right. Like, that's what how heroism and superheroism would play out in our world today. So it's kind of a scary thought, but also really interesting to explore from a television standpoint.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you definitely have corporate, you know, coming in, trying to monetize it and make whatever they could make out of it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And really just making decisions about how things are handled and where superheroes are going to be. And no, you don't save this person if the cameras aren't set up and you don't get the victim's name and you don't do that. Like, no, it's not about saving people. It's about perception.
Right.
And yeah. That's interesting to me.
I find it, some people might find some parts of it a little bit crude. But again, it's very much a grown-up show, but I find it fascinating their take on what it would be like. So again, that's called The Boys, and it's on Amazon Prime right now. And then finally, just a quick shameless plug, but kind of related to the whole what we've been watching thing. I just released an episode of Short Circuits where I talk about decision fatigue and how we have a limited amount of mental energy with which to make decisions. And this is something that's been studied in the psychology industry for quite a while, and how it affects not just consumerism and the corporate climate, but also our media consumption. And like right now, I'm mentally exhausted when I get out of work because I'm doing a lot of training on a lot of really, really heavy, difficult stuff. And I'm exhausted mentally when I get home, and I just want to sit and vegetate and watch something. But then I'm so far behind on so many different things. I'm scrolling through things, trying to find something. And pretty soon, like an hour or two has passed and I run out of time to watch anything. So I talk a little bit about how do you decide what it is you want to binge watch or what it is you want to catch up on? Or do you make decisions based on what mood you're in at the time? And it's something that I've never had to deal with before in the way that I have to deal with now. And I kind of put the question out there of how other people tackle that sort of thing. Hmm. So actually, since I have you two guys here, if you just real quick, like Lou, when you sit down, especially if you've got a limited amount of time and you're behind on a lot of different things, do you have a certain way you decide what it is you want to catch up on? Or do you ever find yourself like not really knowing what to pick, or is that not a thing for you?
No, that's a really good question, because I don't know how I pick from time to time. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like right now I started watching The Boys, like you'd said, and I still haven't finished watching season 3 of Stranger Things. I still want to finish it. I'm sorry, Lizzie. I'm sorry. I still want to watch it. I'm still intrigued by it, but The Boys just seem like a much more fun show for me to watch. It was new and different and fresh. So I kind of gravitated towards that. I've got other stuff on my DVR that I need to finish up. I mean, I haven't watched the season finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's sitting on my DVR. I want to watch that. But I know I want to sit down and be alert for it. And like you said, get home and you're tired and you're like, oh, okay, whatever, you know, and it just,
and you don't feel alert.
No. And you know, you're not going to get everything out of a show like that, that, you know, it was a deep show and you got to watch every single part of it. You can't just be on your phone. We talked about that before on an episode where, you know, are you multitasking while you're watching something, or are you just watching something? And that's something I need to watch and I can't really multitask. So.
Yeah. Lizzie, what about you?
I was just thinking about this because what I've been watching is Outlander, and I specifically didn't start it for a really long time because I knew it would suck me in like immediately. It's like more romantic, wonderful Game of Thrones. Like it's the best thing ever. But it's more like sweepingly romantic, but it's still got a lot of like, you know, the fighting and the politics, and it's just got a lot of different themes to it. So it's very engaging and sweeping, and it's just like time travel, Lou. I don't think Outlander's for you.
I wanted to watch that because I time travel, and I watched the first episode and I went, no, not for me.
No. I would never recommend it to you, but every time they have something time travel-y, I'm like, oh, Lou.
So hold on. What network is it on?
Well, okay. So it's on Stars, but the first two seasons just landed on Netflix. So that's why I watched it, because it's on Netflix. Because it sucked me in, I did the free 7-day. I just started it today because I finished season 2 today. And then they have season 3 and 4 on Stars. And if you do like, there's a 7-day free trial for Stars, which I will so watch 2 seasons in 7 days, please. It'll take like maybe 3 days. That. Let's just be honest. Because what happens, I get too invested. And so now like time is revolving around the show, which is my problem with binge watching, because I get so invested in it, which is why a lot of the time I choose to watch shows I've already seen, like Buffy, or I watch Arrested Development over and over and over and over again. Like I've probably watched it through like 37 times. And it's only 3 good season and then 1 like tolerable season and then a terrible season. So I really just watch seasons 1, 2, and 3 in revolving.
I do that with some shows. Yeah.
Yeah. I do it with Friends. I do it with Seinfeld. I do it with Arrested Development, but I'll still put on like Buffy or Glow. I really like Glow. I'm waiting for the next season. It comes out in August. It's on Netflix. There are shows that I'm waiting for the next season of, and those are so easy for me, because especially with Netflix being like 8 to 13 episodes, like please, I'll watch it in a weekend and we'll be done with it. There are 2 shows that I'm watching in real time, is Handmaid's Tale and Jane the Virgin, which just ended on Wednesday, which I haven't watched the finale yet because I'm not ready to cry, because I will cry. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, like Lou is saying, like I'll pick a show based on my productivity. Like if I want to be productive, I wouldn't be watching Outlander.
Right.
Yeah,
so, there are shows you want to focus on, and then there are shows that are okay for background noise.
You're right.
Yeah, but I have a short list like in my head of things that have been recommended to me. Outlander's definitely been on on my short list for a while. I just knew I shouldn't have dove in, but it's too late now. We're past that. Mad Men is one that I know that I'd like to watch sometime, although I feel like I'm going to be pissed at that show because it's so misogynistic, even though it's appropriate for the time period. I'll rewatch Breaking Bad. I love Breaking Bad. Like it's just so like taking on a new show is a lot for me, especially if I can binge watch like 7 seasons. I will. Mm-hmm. I'll do it in like a week. I'll do it like as fast as I can, because I have to get to like stopping points and then I'll want to watch the rest. So it's really hard for me. So I choose shows I've already seen a lot of the times, other than serials like that I'm caught up with, or like the new season of Fuller House, the new season of Stranger Things, the new season of Glow. Like 8 to 13 episodes, nothing. But if I'm talking about like 20 episodes a season and 8 seasons, like See You in Christmas.
Right. Hey, so let me ask you 2 questions real quick.
Yes.
Handmaid's Tale and Outlander.
Yes.
How dark is Handmaid's Tale? Is it pretty dark?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I think the darkness of it is in direct correlation to what we experience in the world today, not to get politic at all. But I think that because we're in a divisive time, and there are some similar themes in the show, it feels a lot darker. So it's not an escape. It sort of confronts you with some things that we're dealing with in our real life. So I think that's what makes it so much darker.
So it's a high quality show, but it's not an escape show.
No, yeah, exactly. It's incredibly high quality. The acting is insanely good. The story is so well done. Just every decision is precision. Mm. The fact that Margaret Atwood wrote the book in the 80s and it's so relevant now. I mean, they've gone off book by now. They're on season 3. But it's a lot to really watch, but it is weekly. And I will say, like, I accidentally watched season one and two in a binge watching scenario, which is a mistake. If you can find a way to watch it weekly, I think you can take the themes and deal with it a little bit better. I did it the wrong way.
Okay. All right. But and my other question.
Yes.
Outlander.
Yes.
Is it also really dark, or is it a decent escape show? And then I also have to ask, I know, and there's nothing wrong with this, I know, Lizzie, you have a lot of kind of guilty pleasure type things or stuff you watch just because you're such a fan of the genre, whether they're necessarily of critical acclaim or not.
No, this one is
Outlander one of those shows that it's a favorite for you, or is it something that is like objectively a really good show?
No, I think it's really objectively a good show. I think it skews very female, though, because it is a book written by a female. It is literally like Game of Thrones has so much that is misogynistic about it. I mean, it's a great show, uh-huh. And I love it. But when you watch it and you're like, dear God, like, make a choice that isn't about like raping the girl at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that this is very much a female point of view on something that involves politics and war and time travel and romance. So I think it's got so many similar themes to me of Game of Thrones, and it's similarly not safe for work. So it's got a lot of graphic nudity. It's got a lot of like raw battle scenes and wounds on the battlefield and that kind of stuff. So it's a lot from that perspective, but it's just such a great story. So the short micro premise is that she's in the 1940s, a nurse in the 1940s, right after the war. And she goes to Scotland with her husband, and she gets transported back in time 200 years to the Scottish Highlands. And so that's right when the Jacobite rebellion was happening, and the Bonnie Prince Charlie was, you know, mounting a rebellion against England and, you know, the British conflict. So it's a lot of war and rebellion and Scott. It's very Braveheart meets it's like romance, Braveheart, Game of Thrones. That's like the best way I can put it. So it's
okay.
It's like wonderful, but it is very like skewed towards romance, like sweeping and the sweeping music, but it's got a lot of the other stuff too.
Okay, I might check it out.
I mean, if you give it like a good 3 or 4 episodes, like it'll take you in. I mean, it's a smart show.
So if by the fourth episode, that's kind of the sweet spot as to whether I know whether I'll like the series.
Let me think on where I feel like you should give it a try till. That's just off the top of my head. I think I got to look back because I'm too far into season 3 now. I have to look back into season 1 and reevaluate that question. But,
all right. Well, message me in Discord and let me know what you think then, because yes, I've been curious about it for a while. I've heard it's really good, and I don't mind there also being romance in my stories. That's also a part of life. So,
some very tough stuff. I mean, tough stuff sexually, tough stuff overall that they deal with, which I like from a show. I like that it sort of runs the gambit of like war and time travel and politics. And so like, they also change a lot of locations and you're in a lot of different time periods. And it's very fascinating the way they're weaving out all together. So, and season 4 is, I mean, not even on season 4, but I already know that like they're in a completely another location. And I'm like, how do they even get there?
Okay.
So it's really interesting.
Yeah, it was something I started too, and I didn't give it much more of a chance than one episode, and I just couldn't get into it. I don't know, it was just not my thing, but you know, in time travel usually is, but
well, the thing about it is they don't spend a lot of time on the time travel-y part in season 1 and 2 because she just accepts that she's there.
Oh, okay.
And that's it. But in later seasons, they really deal with like what's going on between the two worlds of the 60s. So it's like 20 years later, the 60s and, you know, the early 1800s or the later 1800s and like how to get sort of back and forth from the time periods, which is really interesting. So, but it's not a classic time travel tale. It's not like, let's draw the strings to the locations and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So.
Okay. And, you know, I did prove to you before I can watch a romantic comedy time travel movie because I got sucked into that movie About Time not realizing it was a romantic comedy.
And you liked it.
It was good. I watched. It was fun.
You loved
I did.
It.
I did. It was
I
good.
Still have this to finish that.
This is not a comedy. What?
I still have to finish that.
Oh, you started it?
Oh, it's very funny.
Yeah, I liked it.
I thought it was great, but I was like, wait, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
Right.
I'm like, time travel, yeah, okay.
Outlander's not like, Outlander's not funny.
No, no.
But it's wonderful, and it's all I've been thinking about.
All right, guys, well, I got to duck out because I've got to be up in a few hours. So thank you for having me on the show, filling in for Tim. And like Tim, when Tim ducked out
a couple of weeks ago,
I feel like I'm channeling him properly.
Yeah, you come for the easy stuff when you leave. I see how you are.
Yeah, and then I leave for the hard stuff. That's okay. You guys are more than capable of tackling the hard stuff.
Very good. Okay, Eric, yeah, thanks for being on, and we'll talk to you later.
All right, take care.
Okay, now that he's gone, Lizzie, what can we talk about?
Yeah, let's get really into it.
Let's go over the box office update here real quick before we get into the news. And there's not a lot of news, so we'll see what happens here.
I know.
Let's see. This week at the box office, Fast and the Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. That's a title, a mouthful of title. yeah, I know. Week one, it made $60.8 million, so it did top the box office this weekend. Then the rest of it's all rehash movies. So we have Lion King brought another $38 million in its third week. It's total of $430. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Quentin Tarantino movie made $20 million, bringing its total to $78.8 million. Spider-Man Far From Home made $7.7 million for a total of $360 so far. And then Toy Story 4, still hanging out in the top five in its seventh week, made $7 million for a total of $410.
There you go.
I didn't get out of the movies this week at all, but nothing really intrigues me.
I still haven't seen Lion King, which I really want to see. It came out when I was in Comic-Con, and I just haven't played catch up.
Mm-hmm.
But I did go see Avengers Endgame again last weekend with my mom.
Oh, did
before.
You?
Yeah, it was before the digital release. I wanted to see it. We both wanted to see it one more time in the theaters. And actually, the funny thing is, I have only seen it alone. The four times that I saw it prior to this, I went by myself. And so for me, seeing a movie with a person, it's so weird to say, because I'm sure most people see movies with people, but I go so often alone. Especially something like Avengers or Star Wars or something like that is like a really, it's different. So it was good to see it with my mom.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, for a long time, I went to movies with people all the time. And lately, last couple of years, I go alone because it's nice.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I don't go to the movie to talk with somebody else. I just go to movies and watch it.
Yeah. You don't have to schedule like when can you go? When can I go? You don't have to like, sometimes I feel like someone will ask me a question or something and I'll get nervous that they're going to talk in the movie. And I hate that, you know, like, but we went so late in the game. We sat in the very back. So we did chat a little bit, like really quietly, and no one was around us because I had been so annoyed by that. I was like, I'm not doing that to anybody.
No, I hate that. Yeah. What's also bad is the guy next to me eventually was snoring. Oh my
gosh. Oh gosh. Anyway. What's wrong with people?
I know.
Like sleep at your house.
I know. Hey, stay home. Save the $20. You'll be all set. Next week we have Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Dora and the Lost City of Gold in the Art of Racing in the Rain.
I'm actually kind of really excited about Dora. It looks so like cute tween Lara Croft. I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, the trailer looked pretty good. I mean, I was never into Dora, but, you know, I think the trailer looked good. I think it's a nice take on it. It's not as kid-centric as I thought it was going to be, I guess, from the trailer.
Yeah, it's like a little more YA-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I think it skews a little younger than like Hunger Games, but still like, I don't know, something that adults can appreciate too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Let's see the RCN movie draft. Not much has changed. Only one movie has come out since the last update we had, and that was Hobbs and Shaw. Tim has that one, so it gets him on the board. I am still in the lead. Andrea is close behind me. And then we have a lot of movies left to go. So we'll see what happens here. Tim doesn't think I'll hold out, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Let's see here. Fantasy Movie League. If you guys want to get involved in that, I do have a lot of fun doing this every week. We got about 13 or 15 players that are consistently doing it. If you want to join us, it's randomchatter.com/FML invite. And we're probably in the middle of a season right now. You can join anytime you want to. But it's fun to get in from the beginning of the season so you can, you know, stack up, see where you're at. Otherwise, let's get into the news. So there's not a lot of news, Lizzie. I don't know if you've got anything else that you can add in here as we go along, but there was not a ton. I think we're in that post San Diego Comic-Con era where there's not a lot of stuff coming up because all the news was put out there a week ago.
Yeah, I put one thing in here for the, I don't know if you saw this one article, but
I'll have to check that out. I don't know.
I couldn't hyperlink it in on my phone. So
jeez, it's Lizzie, like, I got a copy and I paste. Know. You know, come on.
I know.
Yeah, we'll figure
so
it out.
So old school.
Yeah, old school. I got a copy and paste. So geez, you know.
Weird. Weird.
Let's see here. So first up in the news, I did see that the CW is ending the 100, the series, the 100, with the seventh season. I don't know if you watched the 100 at all.
No, but it intrigued me. It's one of those ones that I think a lot of people tell me I should watch, but it's like, dude, I have such a long roster. We'll see one day.
I know. That,
but
now that's that it's ending, part of the problem.
Like when a show ends, I'm like, yay, I can watch it now.
Yeah, because now
I
can binge watch it. You're and all then, set. Yeah. I did start this. In 8 days. I think I'm in season 2 or 3. Really weird premise. It was one of the things where when it came out, I was like, really, we're going to make a show about this? That doesn't seem even plausible. But
It's so weird it works.
It's gone on seventh season now. So yeah, I mean they've done their bit, and I think it's gotten more legs and more people watching it. But
I think there were so many shows after Lost ended that were supposed to be like the new Lost, like weird enough, ensemble show. Mm-hmm. And again, I've never seen the 100, but from what I know about it, it is like the closest thing that came along and stuck to something weird like Lost that has a very ensemble cast, and it's nowhere near Lost. Lost is Lost, but I mean, I feel like it just came along at the right time. You know, seven seasons, so like, you know, that's what, 6 or 7 years ago that it started.
Yeah.
So that the timing is right, and it clearly stuck to end with seven seasons. That's a good run.
Yeah, definitely. Seven is a nice, what about 180 episodes, probably 170 episodes, somewhere around there.
Yeah, that's really respectable to tell the story in. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate when a show is like 17 seasons later and you're like, really? Okay.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Usually they go a couple seasons past where they should have ended it anyway, and hopefully they're not in that state with this series yet. But if they end it on a high note and end where they want to, I think it's a good thing.
And honestly, neither you or I could tell everyone whether or not we feel that way.
No, at this point we can't, but we will eventually.
Yes, eventually.
Let's see here. The new Dune movie has been pushed back a month. I'm not sure this is huge news, but the dates was pushed back from from October to November.
Oh, that's not even that far.
No. So it's since,
not this year, is it?
No, in 2020. And I'm sorry, from November to December, not the other way around. They just changed some things around with some dates they have themselves. I don't think it's anything production-wise. It's just trying to position this movie against stuff that they think it'll do well against. So,
sure. And it's a big one, so I think it's going to be big because it's Dune. So get it right. It is,
but, you know, there's been so much Dune stuff over the years, not all of it great.
Not in a while, though.
No, it's been a while, but we had, there's been two series, right?
I only know of the movie.
Well, there was the movie from the 80s that I'm drawing a blank on the director.
No idea.
Okay, anyway. But then there was at least one sci-fi series, right?
I have no idea.
I think that was, there was one sci-fi series back in the 90s, I think it was.
But I think I took a plaid tour at Disney, which is like the private tour that you can take. There's a correlation. Stay with me.
A plaid tour.
It's the people wear plaid and you call them plaids and they give you a VIP tour of the park.
Okay.
And you go to all four parks and you go in the back entrance of rides and you do every ride and it's crazy.
Wow.
But Tarl was our plaid, and he was amazing, but he's a huge Dune fan. And every Dune fan I've ever talked to, I feel like no adaptation has come along that has been the right adaptation for Dune fans. Mm-hmm. Because the books are so, like, so heavy and sweeping across so many themes, and you can't really cover it in a movie unless you do it right, if you're doing more than one. And so the 80s one didn't really do it right. You could do it in a series, but, you know, I don't even think that one got it right. So not only him, but my dad's a Dune fan. A lot of people that I've spoken to that are Dune fans, I don't think they've gotten the adaptation that they were hoping for from a book that they love so much. Right. So I don't have a problem with people giving things a try and reboots when you didn't get the first one right. What I don't like right. is when you did get the first one right, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and then you try to come back and be like, let's make more of a great thing, and you ruin it. I don't like that.
Yeah, there's some don't movies that we don't need to rehash because it was done right, like you said. But yeah, right. a lot of people don't like the Dune.
Stop it.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, a lot of people don't like that Dune movie. From back in the 80s. And I saw it before I read the book, so I have a different appreciation for the movie than I think some true Dune fans do.
Well, sure. I mean, that's always the case. If a person watches a movie, enjoys the movie, and then goes and reads the book, there's a separation that happens because nobody feels like most people, not nobody, there's somebody out there that does, but most people don't feel like, oh, the book has nothing on the movie. When does anyone ever say that? Unless, right. you know, sometimes you go the other way and see the movie first and have a feeling about it and then read the book and you're like, oh, this isn't what I thought. But I feel like that's a rare occurrence.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I think I've said this before on the show. I actually feel like if you see the movie before you read the book, sometimes it's better. Because the movie will never live up to what the book is. And if you see the movie first and enjoy it, then you read the book and you get that better appreciation of all the other detail that you would have had. You know, that's a huge thing.
In this specific instance with Dune or with books sometimes in general?
I think in general.
Oh, sure.
And it's funny.
It does give you.
What's that?
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I go back and forth on whether I want to watch the movie first or read the book first. And I'm usually happier when I see the movie first, even though I try to read the book first. You know what I mean?
It depends for me. If I see a trailer and I've never heard of the book or read the book, and then a trailer comes along that makes me intrigued in it, I can't go read the book because I've already seen the trailer. So my anticipation is mm-hmm. for what I'm going to see, not the story necessarily that the book is going to provide. But if it's a book that's going around that in 3 years is going to become a movie and we should all really love it now because we're going to want to watch the movie, then I'll take time and read the book because I know that that's going to offer me a layer of understanding of the movie later on that I'm going to want. Like I did that for Gunslinger, the Stephen King what's the whole anthology?
Dark Tower.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I did not get through the book. Everyone was like, "This is the next book you have to read. You're gonna love it." Like, and I tried, and I was like,
"Well, didn't get through the book or the seven books."
I didn't get through Gunslinger, which is the first book.
Right.
I was like, "And I'm out." But so a lot of times I will try to read it if it's far enough in advance, if I hear about it, if I read a synopsis and I'm like intrigued, but if it's like a trailer, no, we're done. I have to watch the movie first usually because I'm already attached to what I saw. And now if I read the book, like those are the people I'm going to picture, but I'm not going to have the full scope of the story they're going to tell in the movie, you know, like that
makes sense.
Thing.
So that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do. Genuinely, I know for me reading Lord of the Rings is different. I don't like the books, honestly. They're so long-winded and hard to read, but Hobbit, the book, is wonderful. Mm-hmm. So Lord of the Rings will be put in a different category because I feel like those are backwards. The Hobbit movies are horrible, but the book is wonderful. The Lord of the Rings books are really tough, but the movie is so enjoyable. So it's like a weird, it's in a box. It lives in a corner. Harry Potter, I mean, I read those like before I saw any of the movies, and I have such a deep love on two levels, and it's probably the only thing I can compare any of it to, because that's one that I really, or maybe Jane Austen too, but that's a different story too, because there's 8,000 adaptations of Jane
Austen.
Right,
right. Yeah, there are.
And that's one of those timeless things that you can do, sort of like A Christmas Carol or, you know, Jane Eyre. Like you can do 78,000 adaptations because it's literature. It's not like a novel. It's a little different.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. Well, that's a long answer to that. But yeah, that's how I feel about that.
Well, it's good. Cool. We don't have a lot of news, so it's good. Long answers are good.
That's true. Each bullet point will get so much discussion tonight.
Right. So we have another delayed movie, actually, we're talking about here next. And this is kind of, sad because Tim can't be here, because I'd like to rub it in that Tim's not being able to get this in the movie draft because he owns this movie.
Oh, yeah. So
21 Bridges is.
Oh, that's surprising.
Yeah, it's been delayed from September to November, so it's been pushed back 2 whole months. It doesn't really. Well, it's a big move, but it's like, why would you just do 2 months? I don't know.
And it must be production issue of some kind, or trying to stagger a release.
I don't know. I think it's more.
November doesn't feel like.
So the film is now going up against the Tom Hanks led A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and the Blake Lively led Rhythm Section, and the Disney juggernaut Frozen 2. So they put it up against movies that really have nothing in common with it, which I guess is a good thing, right? Because if you're not going to want to go see, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood or Frozen 2, this is a completely different movie from those.
Yeah, but it's November, so everyone's going to want to see Frozen 2 and It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, because it's like, it's gearing up to Christmas time. It's gearing up to family time. We're going to see a movie at Thanksgiving. Guess which one you're going to choose? Not 21 Bridges.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But in September and October, it might have stood a chance. This seems like a weird choice, other than something behind the scenes that we don't know about. But then the trailer's already out, so we've already seen.
There's been two trailers out. Yeah, there's the original trailer, right. And they released another one at San Diego. So
it looks really good. I'm excited about it.
It does look really good. I mean, the acting looks superb. It's done by Russo Brothers, right? So, they've had a few minor hits under their belt.
Yeah, a couple. Chadwick Boseman's in it.
Exactly.
But I think, timing seems strange unless there's something behind the scenes we just don't know about. But Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood and Frozen, like, come on. You're up against family season. That's tough. That's a tough one.
Yeah, but if you're not going to a family movie, this would be the one you'd go see, right? I mean, if you didn't have to bring, little Timmy to see Frozen 2.
Well, you go to A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood because it's a heartwarming season, and what do you want your heart to be is freaking warmed.
Come on. What's better than cops locking down Manhattan trying to find
not
killers?
Not heartwarming at all. No? Oh, I forgot another thing that I watched.
Oh?
Oh, yes. Okay, there's a new Chris Evans movie on Netflix, so of course I freaking watched it.
What movie was that?
It's the, now I'm going to get the name wrong. it is the, crap. Is it Red Sea? Diving Resort.
I've never heard of that movie, Crap. That must be new.
It's such a great movie. It's crap, It's great. No, it is. Oh, crikey. Hold. Una momento. I'll get it.
I'll just play the Jeopardy theme music in the background.
Yeah, there you go. Do that. It is the Red Sea Diving Resort. So,
Diving Resort.
Yes. And it's got, also has, I don't know how you say his name. I think it's Michael Huseman. He was in Game of Thrones. He was also in one of my favorite Netflix movies, The Guernsey Society of Potato Peel Pies. Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society. That's a movie, and he's in it.
Really? Wow.
Yes. It's a whole thing. But anyway.
Talk about a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. Greg Kinnear's in it, in the Red Sea Diving Resort movie. You can tell that Chris Evans filmed it like in between Infinity War and Endgame, because he's got the longer hair and the beard. So it's like 100% in that time frame. And I tweeted it the other day, but this is how I feel about any movie that comes out in the next 5 years that has Chris Evans in it. It's so exactly what he was doing during the 5 year jump between Infinity War and Endgame. Like, that's exactly what he's doing.
Interesting.
It's everything that he's in a movie in.
Now, was this a Netflix movie, or was this released on the big screen?
No, it's a Netflix. It's a Netflix film.
It is Netflix. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. So that's out. It is not what I... It's not as fast-paced and exciting as I thought, but it was good.
Yes, this is a spy thriller, so...
Yes. It's not quite as thrilling as I was hoping for, but I liked it. Basically, it's about Ethiopian Jews, and they're trying to rescue them from obviously, you know, persecution, and they're trying to get back to the Holy Land. So this group sets up this old resort. It was an abandoned resort, diving resort, as a place to smuggle them out. So Scott, like, it's, I think it's in, set in the 70s. I think the 70s. And so it's interesting. It's very interesting. I just went a little differently than I thought it would from the trailer, but it's good. It's a drama. It's more serious. But there's a couple of funny moments in it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Something to give a try if you're missing your Chris Evans in your life.
There you go. Yeah, definitely. Now, we talked before about Picard.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, going back further than that, did you watch Star Trek before Picard held the captain's seat?
I did. So actually, I saw this movie at at a birthday party when I was a kid, because we used to have Star Trek or Star Wars birthday parties. That's usually what we ended up watching at the end of a birthday party. Yeah, always.
Nice.
My brother's birthday, my birthday, our friends' birthdays. Like, we would watch, like, it mainly ended up being Star Wars. But we did one birthday end up watching Star Trek the movie, or the motion picture.
Motion picture, yeah.
We all fell asleep in the middle of it. It's boring as junk, by the way.
Yeah, it's not really a gripping story. Yeah, it is. It takes a little bit to build up.
So my memory of it is, we're having this gigantic slumber party. We're all in the living room of my friend's house, and we put it on because it's Star Trek and we freaking love Star Trek, right? And so we're watching it, and it is the slowest thing of our lives. And we're kids. We're like between the ages of like 5 and 11. And I fell asleep midway through. I woke up. It's still on. I fell asleep again, and I woke up and it was still on. So my memory of it is that it is the longest movie ever, and that it's so boring. I fell asleep twice, and it was still on.
Lizzie, you're not really selling this as something we're going to talk about here as a re-release in the theaters.
Well, what I want to say is, number one, I bet in the theaters it's a different experience, because it is visually something that was ahead of its time, and that's what the groundbreaking nature of it is for Star Trek fans and sci-fi fans. But I would like to see it again as an adult, even though I know it's going to be boring and long. That's all I know of it.
Well, just for the record, it's 2 hours and 12 minutes, so it is a long movie, over 2 hours.
Yes. Yes.
You know, this was the first motion picture for Star Trek in the theaters.
Yes.
And back at the time, I mean, this was 79 when it came out. And I remember seeing it in a theater, as I think my mom took me to go see it. I was like, I was just amazed by it. Because I was too young to have watched the original series on TV when it aired. Because I'm not, despite what Tim may say, I'm not that old.
Well.
Yeah, Lizzie, come on, you're on my side here.
I am so on your side, okay. 100%. You're so young.
Thank you. But it was a great movie to see in the theater because it was very visually stunning. I mean, it was kind of the first big budget space sci-fi movie after Star Wars.
Yes.
That had good special effects and did justice to a franchise. So they're re-releasing this September 15th and 18th. Fathom Events with Paramount Pictures is putting this back into theaters.
I think, love Fathom Events.
Yeah, they do great stuff and show old movies. We saw the 40th anniversary of Jaws
nice.
A couple years ago in a theater. And this is the 40th anniversary of the motion picture. So I'm looking forward to seeing this in the theater.
To see it. I feel like I could, my dad and I could go and it would be an enjoyable experience because, you know, it'd be the right, you bring the right person with you, but right. I would like to like have a new memory of it. Cause that after seeing that, I was like, you know, when you're a teen, you're like, I'm not watching that dumb movie. We fell asleep 8 times. And then I just never have watched it since because it falls into the canon of your mind as being boring.
Yeah.
That's history. But Fathom Events are so cool. I've seen, I love how they do plays sometimes, right. Or they do opera. I love opera. They show like full operas in Fathom Events and all kinds of fun, like random stuff. I love it.
Let's see. Now we have the article you brought up here about The Rock and Jason Statham.
Yes. So apparently for the Hobbs and Shaw, whatever the heck movie that we don't need, in their contracts, they had that they had to hit an equal amount of punches as the other. So apparently The Rock's sister counted punches for him. And I don't know who counted Jason Statham's punches, but they were counting punches to make sure that nobody punched more than the other one. And then not only that, but neither of them could win their scene. So they had to have an external event that broke the scene and that they wouldn't beat each other so that neither one of them looked weaker, which is the death of the action hero in my mind. What is wrong with them?
That is just ridiculous.
Isn't it ridiculous?
Because neither one of them wanted to look weaker than the other one, right? I mean...
Right. But what is weak about... I don't think that losing a fight, if you've actually put up a fight, is weak.
Right.
Like, failure is not weakness. Never trying is weakness. And this sends a wrong message that trying and failing is somehow a weakness. But it is not. That's insane to me to get philosophical on you right now. But I don't like the message that sends. Not only that, but are you an action hero or what are you?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, nobody thinks that one person in a movie fight is less of a man because they lost the fight. It's how the movie was scripted, right? I mean, it has nothing to do with,
exactly.
You know, you as a person.
Well, number one, that says a lot to me about the fact that they couldn't allow the story to serve the fighting. So the fighting serves the story, which I think is completely backwards. Like the choreography served the story over the actual story driving what happens in the fight.
Yeah.
So now you're messing with scripting? Like now exactly. You're a scriptwriter?
I'm looking at a different article here on, I think, IndieWire, and this goes even back before this movie. It goes back to when Vin Diesel was in the movie and in the other Fast and Furious movies. It says, according to the latest report, franchise stars Jason Statham, Dwayne Johnson, and Vin Diesel, who isn't even featured in this ninth entry of the action tentpole series, all negotiated special arrangements with the producers for their fight scenes. They all had these special arrangements. I'm like, it doesn't make sense. Why are you doing this?
It doesn't make sense. And then what doesn't make sense even further. So, okay, let's say that you're the biggest diva who has to win your fight scene and can't be beat in a fight and wham, 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 whatever, which you can tell how I feel about this story. But then your publicist allows this to come out. So you look like the biggest pansy in the world.
Yeah, right. Now it's out that you've done this. And it's like, really, really? You're being childish to that point?
Yeah, like you're a gigantic baby.
Yeah.
And then, so somebody, I'm not going to be able to find this article. So if somebody finds it, but I saw a tweet that said, for every article about some dumb boy that comes out, some man in Hollywood doing something stupid that comes out, there's an equal article of Keanu Reeves doing something magical. And so there was an article about how in John Wick 3, there was all of these choreographed fights between him and his co-stars and action everything, right? Because it's a very action-oriented movie. Not only did he lose plenty of fights in John Wick 3, but he actually got bruised and beaten in the process because he was really gritty in making it look real.
Right.
And so, So to Hollywood out there, if you're looking for an action hero, look to Keanu Reeves and not to The Rock or Jason Statham or Vin Diesel, because this is garbage.
Yeah, I mean, if you think your image is that important that you can't lose a scene in a fight in a movie, a scripted fight in a movie, I mean, it's not like you're really fighting.
Do they know that they're not really fighting?
Yeah, maybe they don't. Like, oh my God. I really win that scene. I really win that fight. Yeah. No.
And the other thing it speaks to for me in this time of what we've just seen and in the Avengers, in the Infinity Saga and all the behind the scenes stuff we see with how much Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans have regard for each other and genuinely consider each other friends, and the camaraderie we have seen on the set of the film, and just the general like likability of the cast towards each other. Mm-hmm. This is so garbage, like one-upmanship, toxic masculinity at play. And like, we ain't got no time for that in 2019, bro. Like, take that back to 2010, where it belongs, to 1992, to 1985. Like, get it back into the archaic old days. You want to take that back to the 50s, where it belongs? Like, get it out of here. That to me is so ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I totally agree 100%.
Yeah. So there's that. Enjoy.
Oh boy. Well, the last story we have here, we're going to put in our reboots, remakes, and sequels section. And once again, we have a story about Stephen King in his adaptation of television or movies from his books.
He's like all over the place.
He is. And we've had this discussion before about how his movies typically don't always work out real well. I don't know.
Right.
So they're adapting a limited series of The Stand for CBS All Access.
I've never read that book. I'm not a Stephen King person.
No?
No, his stuff is scary.
Not all of it.
No, not all of it. But for me,
The Stand isn't really a horror movie per se. Or a horror
book.
No,
but a lot of his stuff is scary.
Yeah, though definitely. I mean, he
writes scary very well.
Oh, you know, he definitely does.
Yeah, 100%. So he's not an author. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it doesn't always work out when they adapt it into screenplays or television stuff. We've seen so many times that they change a bunch of stuff where it's just not, even when he's involved. It's like when they did Under the Dome, he was involved in the writing of that TV series. And I'm like, this is so different than the book. Where did you go off the rails? But
I think sometimes authors try to update. So when did he write it versus when is it being produced? And there's you wrote it in a, some things are timeless and some things need updating. And the choice between those two things can be really hard to make, deciding what do you need to incorporate cell phones because you're trying to bring it up to our culture? Well, that's going to change a lot of the basic
right.
change part of your premise, plot.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you're not combing this. It would change so many romantic comedies I've ever watched. You're not combing the streets to try to find her. Like, call her and she'll wait for you somewhere. And then you won't have to comb the streets screaming her name. Like, you're done. Like, that's it. Like, Google where the restaurant is and then you're not lost anymore. You know, so I think a lot of times the transition into like a time period when the thing was written and the, I don't know that that's the case with Under the Dome or with any of the other failed projects that haven't flown, but sometimes I see that as a jumping point. And if you don't have somebody who can translate it, like, it doesn't need to be like literal translation, but are you translating the theme of the book into this time period? That can be a tough transition, I think.
Right. It can be. But now he's involved in this again for doing the television portion of this, and he's changing the ending.
Oh, see, I don't. The other thing is there are script writers and there are authors, and those are two different things.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So allow an author to tell an authentic, beautiful story the way that they do with exposition and inner monologue and descriptive scenes and everything. That's what an author does best, right? Like giving up, transporting us away. But a script writer comes in and takes that and translates it into setting, you know, sets and characters and like the breakdown. That's a different skill. So maybe that is not where his gifts lie. Sorry, Steven. I don't know your life. I hope
But you're right. I mean, the whole thing of script writing versus, you know, screenplay writing is a different art. I mean, that's why authors don't, you know, write movies and vice versa.
Well, I think it's why authors should be consultants on the projects that concern their work. Like, to get back to Outlander, Diana Gabaldon is a consultant on the project of Outlander, like very closely so, because it's her heart's project. I mean, this is like the sweeping, it's like a 12-part book series. Like, it's got a lot of books in it. Mm. So she spent so much time in that world, crafting that world, that nobody knows that world better than her. Nobody knows the world of Harry Potter better than J.K. Rowling. Nobody knows the world of Game of Thrones better than George R.R. Martin. But yep. Are they the best ones to translate it into what's happening in a television setting? And I have to cut it into 13 episodes. I have to have a cliffhanger. I have to wait a year for the next installment. That's different than writing a book. So there's a divide there that maybe not every author is suited for.
Yeah. So one thing in an interview with Deadline, so King is writing the 9th episode of the series, and I guess it's a 10-episode limited series, but he says, for fans of the book who have wondered what became of the survivors of The Stand, this episode will contain a story that takes us beyond the book to answer those questions. A continuation to The Stand, we can't wait to share that world with you.
So what is the Stand about?
Give me a little premise. The Stand was basically a engineered virus gets out and kills 99% of the world's population, and the few remaining people in the world kind of get together. It's basically a good and evil story. There's Randall Flagg, who is kind of, you know, the bad guy, and Mother Abigail, who is the good side of things, and it's basically the gathering of the few people left in the world to be good versus evil.
Interesting.
It was a good book, very long book, but very good.
Does it leave it, what it sounds like is the book leaves it a little open-ended and doesn't answer these questions?
You don't know what happens to the survivors after the culmination of the events.
But that's the point, right? Is at the end of the book, you're not supposed to.
Really? Yeah, really. That's what it comes down to, is the story's finished. The events that were building up to it ended, and that's it.
So then why go back
I know.
Take away something that offers, I mean, there's so few things in the world that genuinely offer your imagination to fill in the blank. Like, we're so obsessed with like filling in the blank for people that we don't leave things open-ended a lot of the time.
Right. And I mean, if somebody wanted to pick it up and write the story of what happens and how maybe they rebuild society, sure. But it doesn't need to be a new ending or an addendum to the ending of The Stand.
Right. Like, if part of The Stand is the fact that there's this open-endedness to that chapter of the story, why I don't understand why change it other than a network pressuring to be more palatable to a network audience, which be fair, that sounds correct. Like something that they would do.
Yeah,
like a network would do. I don't know about this network, but.
Well, it's one more thing on CBS All Access that.
Oh, it's CBS.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. So when we both re-up for the Picard series.
Yes.
You know, we can watch this.
I'm going to up in the first place because I never redid it.
No.
I never did it.
Okay. Yep. So, no, I got to go back and watch season 2 of Discovery as well as Picard when it comes out. So.
Well, also, so at Comic-Con while I was waiting for the Hall H, you know, Marvel Hall H panel, I was in the Picard panel.
Okay.
And yeah, and they did, they talked about Lower Decks, which is an animated Star Trek series that's coming.
Yeah, yep.
It looked so funny.
It does.
I'm so excited about it.
We talked about that a little bit last week on the show.
Yeah, and Jerry O'Connell was the panel moderator, and he's doing one of the characters, voicing one of the characters in the show. And his enthusiasm about it made me want to watch it, to be very honest. Like, he was so excited about this show.
Cool.
Like he was like, I was a Star Trek fan, and like he had a Star Trek shirt on, and he was like so freaking jazzed. So I am intrigued by that too. And then there's short treks, which is like the little shorter vignette.
Oh, yeah, I saw that too. Yeah. Yep.
So I was interested by the whole, like, the slate of things from Star Trek that are coming. And I always was interested in Discovery. I just was not willing to get CBS All Access.
Right.
But for Picard,
I did it for the first one just to see it, and then I figure I'll wait till it's somewhere else I can get it for free. But
yeah, but Picard I will, 100%.
Yeah, but, you know, and like you said, though, Lizzie, there's a lot of things coming out, and I'm happy that they're kind of reviving Star Trek. I mean,
yes.
When they took Enterprise off the air, I enjoyed Enterprise, but it was definitely feeling that we've had too much Star Trek on TV for too long.
And I couldn't watch Enterprise.
What's that?
I could not watch Enterprise.
No.
No, I felt it was so not Star Trek to me.
The first season was rough. After that, it got better, I thought. But
first of all, they used a Who song as the opener. You're done. You're out.
I know. Yeah, that was.
That's not Star Trek.
Yeah, that was awkward.
And I love the Who, but no, it's not Star Trek. So I was one of those like rigid, unbending fans that couldn't get over it. But maybe I don't think I'll feel that way about Discovery, but I just wasn't. It's a CBS All Access thing that I couldn't get over.
Well, that too, yeah. But I'm glad they're coming back. I'm glad they're doing things. I'm glad they're getting fans excited about this stuff again. I'm just excited.
The fact that Seven and of Nine and Data and Riker and Deanna Troi are all going to be in Picard's show, like, super jazzed about that.
Yeah, all the cameos that were shown in the teaser was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and on the panel, Patrick Stewart confirmed that Marina Sirtis and Jonathan Frakes will be back in the show as well, because Jonathan Frakes is directing and, you know, he's a part of the production.
He's directing some. Now he's in the show too. Yeah. In fact, we talked last week about the fact that he had said on Twitter, he's like, oh my God, thank God that he announced that because now I can talk about it.
Yeah.
Which was
good.
And
I always loved Marina Sirtis and the fact that, you know, they're married in the show now. I mean, they were married in Nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that they would both be coming back. And they dealt, and, you know, Patrick Stewart talked about the fact that, you know, Data essentially dies in Nemesis.
Right.
But B4 takes over, you know. I really like Nemesis. My dad is like gonna listen and laugh at me because he's like, that movie's so stupid. And it is, but I love it. I love everything about it. It's my first introduction to Tom Hardy, the part where Data dies, and then at the end when B4 is singing Blue Skies, it makes me cry because I think it's so sweet.
Yeah, right.
I'm not saying it's a superior film, but it hits me in the feel bone. So I'm all about that. I'm all about Picard. Give it to me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I can't wait till it comes out. So we'll definitely talk about that when it comes around.
Oh, yes. You and me are going to be, like, freaking out about it.
Exactly. Well, I think that brings us to the end of the episode. Lizzie, thanks for being here. Even though Eric couldn't join us, we'll thank him, too. He was part of it, I guess.
Yes, and thank you to my internet for holding out the whole episode.
I know. It's been great having you back. It's been frustrating. We couldn't get you on.
What a miracle.
I know that Skype got smiling tonight and let Lizzie part of the show.
Yay!
Well, we'd love to hear from you guys. We told you at the beginning of the show how you can get a hold of us. Send us emails, hit us on Twitter or Discord. The music you hear at the podcast here is The Perfect Kiss of Bruce Stolle. Until next week, take care, everybody.